You're listening to the Just Giants podcast with Grump and the Cranky Fan.
Be sure to listen for free on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podbean.
Welcome back to Just Giants with Grump and the Cranky Fan, the best damn podcast for the best damn football team. I am your host, the Football Grump. With me, as always, is Mike the Cranky Fan, and we are here post-Easter, post-opening day.
Post-vacation? Yeah.
Post-vacation, post-UFL kickoff. Spring football has started, which means, you know, this is kind of the ramp up to the draft, if you, you know.
Yeah.
You've 4 weeks of football before the draft? Three?
Four. I guess so. Over under for how many quarters I will watch of spring football is probably kind of low, to be very honest. Too much going on right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's another problem, I think, that you have to time this stuff to be like, I don't necessarily know. Like, I agree. We've had this conversation before about the need for a different league, something to develop players. I think we agree that they're is some sort of interest on some level of a non-season football season. I just think personally, you know, right now, really from now until like June, there's so much going on. Baseball just started. You're getting ready for the playoffs in basketball, getting ready for the playoffs in hockey. You're coming through, you know, you have the Elite Eight in the Final Four for men's and women's basketball. There's so much that it's like, I don't have a free moment to say, all right, I'm going to spend the next 3 hours watching a spring game. It's just so much. Maybe if they made this more of a summer thing, like after the draft, you know, guys that aren't drafted, they could then populate rosters from there. I don't know.
So I've listened to interviews with Daryl Johnston and like other people. And I think that, if you asked Danny Garcia, The Rock, and Daryl Johnston, and Dean Blandino, and whoever else, there's a Russell person that's like the CEO. If you asked them about the timing of the start, I think they would all agree that this was not the best weekend, but disagree on what is the best weekend. I think it's something that they're trying to figure out, right? Like they talk about having to navigate a bunch of different things. For this year, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact the merger is so many moving parts and a lot of legal stuff that had them really tied up. And so I think their original plan A is to kick off after the Super Bowl and do like an early spring thing while there's still some football fever and you can just kind of extend the football season. I think that's what they wanted to do as plan A, but were unable to do because of the merger starting so late. But I don't necessarily disagree with you. I mean, I think Easter weekend is an abysmal weekend. Let's just put that there. You had two games on Easter Sunday. The fact that they got something like 23,000 people to go to those two games is pretty wild because,
yeah,
dude, if I were a kid and I would absolutely want to go to a football game on Easter Sunday and my parents would never let me do that, ever.
Yeah, I mean, even like a baseball game, like I was down at my parents' house this weekend and I was like, anybody want to go to the Rays game? They thought I was an insane person. So that's not happening. So to go to, and that's a team, they want an established team in an established sport, you know, to say, hey, who wants to go see Memphis in the UFL? And be like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. And you know, I mean, they are currently working in select markets where something like going to a football game is not ridiculous, right? Like if you're in Birmingham, Alabama, it's not ridiculous. If you're in St. Louis, Missouri, it's a little, you know, I think you can say it's a pretty big deal. But
I guess the question would be, if you're the football fan, do you think there'd be more interest for like keeping the wave going after the Super Bowl, or you know something, it is June 30th, I'm sitting here, my baseball team is 30 games out of first, there's nothing else going on, I'd rather go to see football now?
Well, I think it's an interesting question because I think you can make a strong argument for starting right after the Super Bowl. My initial thought, me being me, you know, you and I are from up north, I don't want to sit in a goddamn spring football game in February. I don't want to go to that game. You know what I mean? Like, it's cold. as it is, I've been to a baseball game on opening day up here in Queens, and it's cold. I don't enjoy it. And that's like late March. So I think for a weather perspective, late March is right. I think, you know, they chose that they didn't want to go up against March Madness, I think.
Let's look at it from the bigger picture. I mean, attendance is one thing, but these leagues are going to live and die based on if people watch on TV.
Right, so, but hang on. There's another argument to this in that people aren't going to watch on TV if they see empty stands. I mean, that was a point kind of proven by the USFL having empty stands. It looks bad on TV when you've got an empty stadium. So yeah. It's a little bit of both. It really is. So I actually agree with you. I have no problem. The USFL, I forget when they kicked off. I want to say it was late April last year. But they had their championship game on 4th of July weekend. I think that sounds awesome. I think that's perfect. I mean, you just get fireworks, a weekend where nobody does anything. There's no set like protocol for what you do on 4th of July weekend. It doesn't matter. You can be with friends or family or whatever.
I'm just looking at it as far as like the landscape. And to me, the barren part of the sports calendar really is, you know, from when the Stanley Cup finals, the NBA finals end until you get into football starting in September. I mean, you have baseball and then you have, you know, MLS and, you know, the MLS, you know, audience is not moving the needle based on, you know, choices and decisions people have to make. So to me, it's just, again, for the people, empty seats may be an issue with them, but at the end of the day, it's like, are you more likely to spend a Saturday afternoon, you know, with not as many choices to watch that as opposed to, like, it's going to get lost. You know, next month when we get into the playoffs and stuff, it's going to be completely lost, and especially in markets like this where it's not even going to register a blip in ratings.
Yeah, but I don't think that we're really the market that they're aiming for year one. But also, you're talking about, when you said playoffs, I had to even think about what sport you're talking about. Like, the NBA playoffs only matter to the teams in it.
That's not true. Look at the ratings. That's not true.
Okay. Well, the NHL playoffs, I can tell you, matter to almost nobody, including the markets that they're in. So, I mean, they're not worried about certain things. I think they're worried about March Madness first and foremost, which is why they waited till it was mostly over. And I don't know, but like the Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, I don't think they actually went up against anything big.
This past weekend was, other than the tournament games, that's the biggest thing that was going on this past weekend. But you also, you know, you have things coming up, like the Masters is a huge.
Yeah. And Daryl Johnson mentioned that. He said that we have to pick our poison with what we're going up against, because you're never really going up against nothing.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, of course, there's always going to be something, but to me, like, your best chance to get attention on it, if not necessarily eyeballs, is when there's lack of clutter for everything else. And I think now until June, there's a lot of clutter.
I would agree. Yeah, and there's also a shitload of NASCAR going on right now.
Yeah, even NASCAR. I mean, at a lower level, for the places you're talking about, like where college football is king, you may not think so up here, but like college baseball is kind of important. Like in LSU, huge, you know. And again, it's something else you're taking attention away from. All right, I'm going to get into this. You know, people are listening to podcasts about basketball and hockey, and those are things they're taking away from. How do I get into this league? And how do I get into this? I mean, I don't know. Well, they'll figure it out. What's going to be the right niche for it? But personally, for me, I would have pushed it out a little further.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a perfect solution. This isn't my solution. Like I said, I probably would have done right after the draft and went with that fervor instead. I think that's a better time to gain momentum late April.
Like I said too, with that, I mean, now you could start stocking rosters with guys that weren't drafted.
Yeah, with what? What are you talking? Oh, no, that's not how that's going to work, though. If you're starting, then they're not going to have any practice. Those guys that didn't get drafted, they're working towards being an undrafted free agent and stuff like that. If they're going to do the spring football thing, they need to, like, ramp into it. I think the bigger thing is that they don't see that as being the development cycle that's proper. Because then you have you have players playing until like July, and then they're going right into training camp if they get signed. So it's nonstop football.
That's what I meant.
That's what I'm saying. I know what you said. I'm saying they're guys that they are developing. They don't want to do it that late because they put them into an impossible situation to transition to the NFL. I know what you're saying. The guys who didn't get drafted can then play in the league, but it's too quick of a turnaround.
Yeah.
There are going to be established teams. I think that they're unrelated ideas.
Oh, no. What I meant was, guy's not drafted and is not signed. He's not an unsigned free agent. And it's like, well, now what? Well, this is an option and they can start playing right away. And they play that season and maybe, again, these guys we're looking at are developmental guys. If you're not good enough to be, even an unsigned, you play that season until August and maybe you spend it, you get, this has to be in concert with the NFL. I'm thinking of this as we're making this up now, but maybe there's some sort of way the NFL has like two or three roster spots for guys, almost like you're on our roster, you're not even the practice squad, you come from this development league, who you play that first rookie season, we have your rights, but you're not playing until then you get into the groove with the real team for off-season workouts or something. I think there's something that could be worked out if the NFL wants to really buy into this being a developmental league. I mean, that's something we don't know yet either. We would like it to be, but we don't know what that kind of coordination, if there or even communication is between the two.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's too late. I don't think that's going to work. But
yeah,
I like I said, it's a delicate thing because the NFL has intentionally taken up a large portion of the calendar, and all the other spots are filled with other American sports, which would be basketball and baseball, essentially, and NASCAR. So there is no perfect solution. They have to bank on football being popular. And, the fact that it's only played on weekends. So if you follow a specific baseball team, and maybe you won't even have to choose because your team will be playing at 7 o'clock on Saturday and they have Sunday off. You know what I mean? Like, I think they just have to worry about that.
Really accessible for gambling. That's the other option, too.
I mean, everything's accessible. They can get darts on TV at this point, I think, by just putting lines at the bottom. At this point, sports live and die by gambling, so the more you can get that integrated, the better. And the fact that ESPN now has ESPN Bet and they're broadcasting this, which, by the way, I've watched more ESPN than I care for this past weekend, watching two UFL games on it. God, they are bad. They have the worst broadcasters, I swear. What has happened to that network since I was a child?
We'll do another off-season episode of how much I hate ESPN and how they've ruined everything. But
it's amazing that the worldwide leader in sports has become the worst broadcasting company of them all. But in any case, Giants news. This is just Giants.
Oh, yeah.
15 minutes on UFL was not my intention by saying I watched some games. But owners meeting this past weekend. I don't think that's that interesting. I think that this is one of the most boring... you're looking too hard at things kind of situations.
I don't think it's boring. I just think it's completely meaningless and irrelevant. I think people listen to, just because John Mara opens his mouth and words fly out of it, people take what he says as gospel. I mean, again, we are in prime smokescreen season. And
also, this meeting is in prime smokescreen season every single year.
Yeah.
This is practiced at this point.
Nobody from the owner to the general manager to a scout to any coach is going to unzip their fly and show you their junk. And, we are trying to get the best player possible based on the position we will be drafting and the best value and the best player. They are not going to tip their hand but too much by telling you what is in our playbook and what our strategy is. So anything that's said, if Mara says, I'm not going to stand in the way of us drafting a quarterback, that doesn't mean anything. You shouldn't take that as, they are drafting a quarterback. Because if they really want to draft a quarterback, they are not tipping their hand and letting somebody pass them in a trade or pick the guy they may be interested in. It's just and people just every single year fall into this trap. And so great, if they want to talk, great. I mean, I know Dable didn't say shit in his things and Mara, nicely spoke. I don't ever need to hear these guys speak ever, and especially right around the draft. Just keep you guys keep your trap shut, and let's draft.
I think that we're lucky as Giants fans to not have a Trumpian owner. And by that, I mean just like a, like Jim Irsay. You know, just somebody who's just, what will he say next? You know what I mean? Like, he is a very boring owner when you get down to it. And, like, he's not very excitable. He's very uneventful as an owner. And it makes these things a little less chaotic, because I know he's opening his mouth and just drivel is coming out. You know what I mean? He's never really tipping. He's never really saying anything when you listen anyway. A lot of it, to me, feels like retroactive connecting of dots. Like, oh, he said this at the owner's meeting, and then afterwards they did this, so I'm just like, sort of. I don't know. Like, draft day. Like, draft day is its own animal. It's a living organism that changes as the day goes on. There's no way you're gonna connect shit from.
Well, it all goes back to what we always say: is that if you have a belief, if you are not in the Daniel Jones camp, probably from day one, you want a new quarterback. Period. And you are going to glom onto any little piece of news, rumor, innuendo, smokescreen, whatever, that's going to allow you to believe that they are going to draft another quarterback and get a new one in the year. It's all about what you want to believe and what you want your narrative to happen. So when Mara says something as innocuous as, like, I wouldn't stand in the way of a trade of drafting a quarterback, which is not actually saying he's, you know, telling them to do it or anything. That's music to your ears, and you're going to run with it. And it's like, I told you so. You guys were wrong. I was right. All of, you know, everybody wants their own validation, and they just want what they want. And, you know, that's not just Giant fan. That's called being a fan, period. You just have to take away that ego you have of what you want and what you think is right, and let these guys do their jobs. The bottom line is, these guys have to do their jobs. They have to do their evaluations. They have to put on their big board who they value from here to here. And drafts actually have to happen. Picks have to start happening. They react with, they make their moves. That's all this thing is. This isn't this master, you know, 3D checker chessboard of figuring out how to get the pick you want. It's proactive and reactive at the same time based on the conditions around him. That's it.
And I think, honestly, the quote, I'm not going to stand in the way of them drafting a quarterback, is pretty much synonymous with what I think is an old quote from John Mara, which was pretty much that, essentially, that Joe Shane is in charge. Those two sentences are the same thing, really. But, I mean, like I hired this GM for a reason. I want him to make the decisions while I own the team. That is the same thing as saying, I'm not going to get in the way of you making a decision on a quarterback. It's the same shit.
And that's more important to me that you made the comment about having an Irsay as an owner who says crazy shit, and you have to kind of like circle the wagons behind it. I'd rather have a crazy guy like Irsay saying foolish things than having a maniac like, you know, Al Davis or, you know, Jerry Jones or, you know, who just think they are GMs and think they are football people and just are hiring and firing at whims. You know, they are trying to do fantasy football and stuff. So him saying, you know, inferring pretty much that Joe Shane's in charge, is that should be the most comforting thing as a Giant fan. Is, you know, whatever you think of the mayor is, where, you know, you think they've done a bad job or good job hiring GMs or coaches, they hire guys and let them do their thing. You know, jury is out whether Joe Shane and Dable and Kafka and company were good hires or not. We'll see at the end of their tenures, but at least he's handing over football operations to these guys and letting them do their thing without being, you know, the guy behind the curtain making all different moves.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird to say, but I am kind of happy that there's an owner that we have an owner that's not, you know, a maniac. Like, the fact that it's just like, is John Mara kind of a meddler? Like, the fact that you have to ask and it's kind of a meddler, that's enough to tell me, like, not more than the next guy. You know, at some point, the owner of a Corvette cares about the kind of oil you put in it. You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, the fact you should be raising eyebrows about this ownership group is because we've had a run of you know, not talking about Dable necessarily, but we've had a run of bad hires at head coach. And, you know, this team has been, you know, you take away it's two big things not to take away from. You take away this, those two Super Bowls, this has been a pretty bad organization for a long time. And, you know, shit flows downhill. So, I mean, but that's different than just being a guy who thinks he's in charge and thinks this team's in bad shape. Because I mean, this is not a James Dolan situation with the Knicks by any stretch, where he thinks he's, you know, at some level is kind of a de facto GM. We don't have that.
I will say also, I'm willing to give John Mara some credit that I don't think has been mentioned in a while, in that, you know, he's bucking trend a little bit by going with Joe Shane. He is outside the family, very much so. I mean, you know, he rode Jerry Reese and Mark Ross far too long. I think the two of them had proven that they were bad at their jobs for quite a while. Mark Ross way more so than Jerry Reese. But then, you know, dipped into the well, brought back Dave Gettleman, you know, kept that family approach to everything. And when that was clear that that wasn't working, he didn't just switch to somebody outside the family. He took somebody who came in there and just gutted the place. And then also kind of smoked out a few more that John Mara wasn't willing to get rid of, or that, you know, somebody didn't turn over. So, like, credit where credit's due. John Mara is thinking outside of the box. He's going beyond what his father did before him. You know what I mean? Like, he is trying new things. So,
well, I wonder also how much of an influence, like, the Tisch side of the ownership group is kind of involving this, too, because, you know, they have a voice.
That's a great point.
And maybe, you know, they're kind of like, hey, you know, enough's enough. You know, we've kind of deferred, you know, running in this organization to you guys, but, you know, we do have a voice in this thing, and I think we need to kind of reevaluate how this is all being done. So it's possible. I have no proof of that, or I'm not in those owners' meetings or anything, but, you know, they are 50-50 owners.
Tisch doesn't show up often, but whenever he does have something to say. You know what I mean, like, he's got an answer for questions, and he's got a quote ready. You know what I mean? Like, anytime he's asked, he comes away with a quote. So, I agree with you. Getting into today's conversation, as we mosey through the Giants roster going into 2024 and heading towards the draft, we're going to take a look at safeties and DBs. I look at safeties in today's NFL's defenses as kind of interchangeable with inside corners or slot corners or whatever, box safety. I mean, like, that's just kind of the way the defenses are being constructed now, is just getting as many DBs on the field as possible. And they have different skill sets from outside corners, and so safeties are often interchangeable with corners, nickel corners, I mean. So I kind of group them all together, because as injuries happen and depth is needed, that's really the well that you're often pulling from, and less so grabbing some, you know, 6'1", 34-inch armed outside corner to play nickel corner. So
makes sense.
Going through this, the Giants players from 2023. Let's start with the biggest one. The biggest one that was on the table was Xavier McKinney. A second round pick was taken at the top of the second round. I believe we traded up to that spot to get him, perhaps, or maybe he just fell to us.
I believe he traded up for him.
I know we did for Landon Collins. I'm not sure. Regardless, deal was expiring. Had kind of a. He's a great player. I think he's an intelligent guy on the field. Bit of a rocky off the field tenure with the Giants, but I would say rocky. I wouldn't say pathetic or dismal or, you know, disaster.
I would say more headline grabbing than disaster or rocky. I think
the hand thing is kind of rocky.
Yeah, I think also knowing more now what the state of the room was for the defense with coaches and everything, it maybe you put a little more perspective, but I'd say
I would agree with that.
Yeah. You know, at where we both probably 6 months ago were like, is this guy threatening the composure in the locker room and the camaraderie and all that stuff? Now maybe, you know,
he might have been the one thing holding the two teams together.
Yeah, he might have been the one preventing people from getting the shit beat out of each other too. So yeah, that to me, If I'm grouping all the things like age, contract, availability, performance, you know, X factory, leadership, that to me is pretty low on my priority list of, you know, evaluating what he is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would agree with that. But nevertheless, you know, when he's coming up for a contract, all of those things get inflated, right? Like, you start looking at all the setbacks. Like, when you can't afford someone, or money's going to be a problem, you need to make the financial decisions. All of the shortcomings come, you know, exploding with, you know, I don't know. They multiply. They're exponentially worse, right? So, like, his lack of leadership certainly gets inflated. But I think more than anything, if you want to keep it on the field, his tackling sucks. Tackling is not good. I think it's probably the worst part of his game. And you know, I think that he has enough speed to be kind of like a center field safety, but he doesn't have the best speed to be a center field safety. It's kind of like he can do that. Should he always do that? I'm not so sure. He's certainly got the intelligence to make up for some of the speed he's lacking. You know, I don't know. But I think the biggest thing for me is that, like, he's going to command a giant contract, and this is a safety that doesn't tackle well. That's a problem for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm like an old man. I think I've become an old man with form tackling.
I think when you're talking about someone's going to be one of the highest paid safeties in the league, and especially you have a new defensive coordinator coming in, I think sometimes, you know, and we're not, we're not at that, we're this close away from being in the conference finals or, you know, even a Super Bowl or anything. It's like, it comes to like, is he a guy you build around? I mean, this is kind of what this exercise is. Is he a build around guy for the future, or is he a good for now? And, you know, I actually had him as a build around. I thought that, you know, for all the shortcomings he might have, you know, he's still one of the best players we had on defense, and he's getting into the prime of his career. And, you know, unless there was something, there was a discussion with, you know, the new defensive coordinator and, you know, everything top of the line, they're like, there were questions. Maybe they just said, you know, if there's too many questions, let's move on. So.
And I think that's possible. You know, I think that the safety position is going to be really important in this defense. You know, we had Byard in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I think that that's certainly possible, but I have him as a build around slash good for now. I think Xavier McKinney is a build around guy. I just don't know if he's a build around guy for this defense coming in. I think that there's a chance that he's less of a build around guy with this organization, with this coaching staff, based on what happened, you know, in his tenure here. It's kind of an intangible, maybe less his fault, more so circumstantial thing, but I think that it factors in financially. Like, if he were kind of, if he were the guy who really truly kept the locker room together or something throughout all of last year, if he was like presented like a good teammate face to the media, if he was on the field seen keeping things together, you know what I mean? Like, if it was clear that he was a standalone leader in a turmoil locker room, maybe there would, you know, the fact that
it adds a little bit more of a case. I just don't know if you're going to spend that much money for a guy where that's, you know, we weren't really sure about your performance on the field or anything, but you know something, you're such a good guy.
No, that's not what I mean. I think it's like, yeah, you know, if he demonstrated immense character during all that, where you could say it's like, oh, you know, if weren't for his, there's something to him. There is that intangible that is worth keeping him.
Basically, yeah.
There's something to him that's worth keeping. But that was going to be the only thing that was going to save him, I think. I think just like the circumstances around the timing of his contract expiring were just bad. And that's that. Right.
Let me ask you a question. If Wink is still here, is he still here?
No, I think that actually, I think he happened to be part of a central part of their problem. You know,
well, I mean, the assumption that Wink is still here, meaning, you know, Wink is, there's no internal issues between Wink and Dable. I mean, like, this is an alternate universe where, you know, Wink is working out with Dable. They're in, you know, they're kumbaya, you know.
But everything else from last year still stands. All the injuries, whatever. Then I think that you look at the defense as a whole last year, and you can't really say it was bad. I mean, you can't. You can't say necessarily that it was great. There were a couple times they got whooped. But you can say, well, you know, There are still some weak spots on the roster back there. If we lose McKinney, it's going to get even weaker. But this was a good defense last year. Xavier McKinney is a good part of that defense. He was a captain. So, yeah, I think that if you're taking the shenanigans out of last year and you're just leaving the bad luck and the injuries and the result, then, right. yeah, I think you don't do anything to harm the defense that kept us fairly relevant. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's no way Tommy DeVito wins a Monday Night Football game without this defense.
I agree. 100% agree.
Even though that defense gave up a lead pretty late. That might have been the worst example of a DeVito game. In any case, you know, McKinney's a great player, bad timing. And I think that's kind of it. Signed a 4-year deal with Green Bay, way more than we were going to spend.
Yep.
Just is exactly what it is. Let's flip to the other starting safety, Jason Pinnock. He is in his contract year this year. He is only 25 years old. I have him as a build around slash good for now guy. And that sounds kind of silly, but what I'm saying is there's no reason not to extend this dude. He's 25. He emerged as a playmaker last year, had some key interceptions. He doesn't make too many big-time mistakes. He's clearly very athletic. He's not currently catching, like, you know, national name, attention, fame, but you always want to extend guys before that happens. Now, do you want to extend him now? Maybe not. You know, you got a new defensive coordinator coming in here. I think that his traits translate to what you'd want, where he's really fast, he's really rangy, he can probably play center field. I don't know if he has the IQ to be a center field guy. Is he going to make the wrong decision, you know, get beaten behind, something like that? I'm not totally sure. So maybe you want to extend him throughout the year, but nevertheless, I think that he is young talent that is emerging, and you want to get ahead of that before his market value moves up. So I think that, in my opinion, you evaluate him throughout training camp. If he wins that starting spot, like I think that he will, and he starts performing in the first couple weeks, then you start thinking about extending him, because you don't want two empty spots in the backfield. And if he's emerging, like I think he might be, you want to get ahead of that. I'm interested in your thoughts on him. I don't think
that's interesting, because you went from, well, if he wins a starting spot, let's extend him.
Well, hang on. There's a couple things here. It's a new defensive coordinator, so nobody is set in stone for anything. No starting spots.
Yeah, but nobody's set in stone, but, you know, you kind of have leanings to who you think your starters could be.
And I am leaning that way. He won a starting spot in literally one preseason game last year, and he never lost it last year. I think the more interesting thing is, so for me, he's really a good for now, but how can he be good for now if he's in his contract year? It's kind of how I looked at it. So he is somewhere leaning towards build around, I think. I do think that he wins a starting spot. I do think that he continues to be a playmaker coming up. I'm just making that prediction based on his slow emergence.
My thought process of someone as a good for now versus a build around guy is having him on the roster influencing my decision making when it comes to draft time or free agency? So, like, a build around tells me I'm set with this guy. You know, this guy, you know, we're going to try to re-sign him after next year. This is the guy we found our solution. He's it. As my good for now is, you know, he's going to start probably this year. He's, you know, but if I have the option to draft better and he's on the table, I'm going to take him.
Well, here's the thing, though. You got two safety spots and only one of them's open. So if you have an option to draft better, you're going to take him, but he's going to start opposite him.
I know, but I'm talking hyper specific to him. Like, you know, I know what the entire room is and everything, but I'm saying if I have the option to draft, you know, a safety to replace him, I'm not going to say no. I have my guy, and that to me is what a build around person is, and I don't think he's there for me just yet.
No, I think he's in between that.
And that's fine. And I think we're both kind of in the same place with it. I'm wait and see. I mean, I don't think we have to make that decision about – he's certainly not a move-on guy. Mm-mm. I think, you know, move-on guy to me is this guy is not cutting it. We need to upgrade this position immediately. I don't think we need to upgrade it with him immediately. But also, I don't know if he's the guy – I mean, I think after this year, we'll definitely have a more definitive answer with him for sure.
Yeah, like I said, he's a presumptive starter for me, mainly due to numbers and the fact that he had the position last year. I think he'll be an open competition with some other people, but my thing is that I think that he is going to continue to get better. He's gotten better every step of the way. I think
certainly jump classes and go from a good to now to a absolutely.
Yeah, and he's training up. But I mean, he's never going to be, in my opinion, like an Andrew Thomas level of build around. But he's certainly possible by the middle of this year to be like, next year, maybe we worry more about tight end than safety. You know what I mean? Like, I think it might change your pecking order of offseason needs or something.
That's
like that.
I think we're going to do this exercise every year going forward to see how.
Yeah, I like this.
How each individual kind of shifts around. Yeah.
I'm going to switch over to Dane Belton, who kind of was the first backup, I guess. He's signed through 2025. I have him kind of as a good for now. I'd like to see him in this new defense. I think that Dane Belton's like an interesting guy because he doesn't really do anything exceptionally well or exceptionally badly. But he isn't like a natural ball hawk. Like he just happens to be around the ball a lot.
I think the Giants have a lot of guys who kind of fit into this category too of they're good for nows because let's see what happens with them in this year, next year, year after type of thing. Where
right.
They haven't said, okay, this guy is a bust and I'm ready to move on. Or, I think they just have to still be kept in the oven for a couple more minutes as they still cook. And he's a good example for that. This is a good for now in Penn.
Yeah, I actually really like Dane Belton. I think he's a perfect third safety to come onto the field. And for whatever reason, I think maybe it's just he's on the field. 24 is on the field. Let's aim at him. And for whatever reason, testing him always seems to end pretty badly. I don't know what it is, but he'll go on the field for one play and he'll have like a pass breakup or something. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move forward to Javarius Owens, was drafted last year, signed through 2026. Again, like this is a hard one to grade, or value, assess his value to the team. But it's easy to simply say, based on his age, his cap number, and the security we have with him, the fact that he's mainly special teams and he's like a backup kind of safety, good for now. There's no reason to make any sort of strong decision about him. His destiny is entirely in his hands, in my opinion.
I had him as a move on.
Ooh, interesting.
But I didn't really. I'm not going to die on the hill for it. I just felt like for someone that is kind of more of a special teamer guy and a backup guy, Maybe we could find one a little, maybe a little younger or, even cheaper. I mean, I don't think he's a serious drain on the salary cap as it is. But to me, that's kind of a, what is our reasonable expectation for what his peak performance going to be?
On defense?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's going to get a fair shake, I think, probably with this new defensive coordinator. So I think it's kind of up to him. Some of the things I've seen from him, remember last year Bobby Skinner put out a really good video on him probably almost a year ago today, probably like right after the draft he probably did it. He has some talent, you know what I mean? Like, and I think given an opportunity, a full year in an NFL weight room with NFL meetings, and keep in mind, defensive back meetings under Wink Martindale had to have been like calculus for a geometry student. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm sure that he is twice as intelligent as he was, day one walking into this building. So, my expectations for him are a complete question mark. Like he could be, if he has not improved at all from last year and he is strictly a special teams player that does well based on his just natural ability and he's like a backup player, then I think that that's fine. I think that that's a need that the team has, is that spot, like a good special teams player and backup player. But I do think that, the ball is in his court to rise beyond that. Like I said, he had traits coming in here. And you know, I didn't even think he was going to sign to the active roster. I'm pretty sure neither one of us predicted him to be like on the 53, and he was. So yeah. You know, that I think that says a lot of our expectations versus his reality. And you know, he could rise beyond that. It wouldn't shock me if he did. Like I said, everyone's going to get a fair shake in this defense, I think.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when you're starting to get towards like 50, 51, 52, 53 on the roster, that's where I'm going to be a little harsher on the, you know, you have to show something for me enough to say you're not just a move on, you're at the bottom of the roster. You showed me something where you could be, you know, a player at some point on this team. And I guess maybe I don't have that little something that's like, with him. And that's okay.
No, that's okay.
Guys at the bottom of the roster as opposed to...
No, but you make an interesting point, man. I'm thinking about this now. Like, the relaxed practice squad rules. Like, do you really want your 51 through 53 to be special teams guys anymore? With the relaxed rules, do you want to just, like, have your good special teams... Or I guess not your special teams aces or anything, but, like... Your core, like, quality special teams, like, just strong players on your practice squad, just make them elevations? I don't know.
Well, I guess special teams are going to be a lot different next year. And
that's a good point, too.
With the new rules, which we really haven't talked about on this, there may be a whole new skill set required to be a special teamer, you know, especially on kickoffs. You know, the gunner is not nearly, you know, a guy who just hauls ass down the field is not as important anymore, you know. It's more about tackling now and different things. So I think we're going to have to see how this kind of – how it plays out, how the new kickoff rules are, how coaches and special teams coordinators game plan for it, and how it's actually just playing out before I think these decisions really are made. So we're a little bit in flux right now.
Yeah, it is a good point. I'm interested to see how the traits of a special teamer are adjusted to the new kickoff. I mean, if it stays –
Because let's be honest, I mean, the way special teams are trending, that there's going to be more and more kickoffs and less punts. I mean, more people go for it on fourth down where they're punting. You know, teams score more, so there's more kickoffs after the fact. You know, just something just to keep an eye on this year. And again, this is year one of it, but it's a pretty big change to the game.
I mean, well, we'll see. We'll see, because I don't think they moved the ball back. So I think you're still going to see a shitload of touchbacks.
Isn't there something where if it's a touchback, it's a bigger penalty now? Like, are they moving it like to the 35 or something? I thought I read it's like they don't want touchbacks. They want actual
Should just move the ball back. I don't know. The NFL and its infinite wisdom of just circling itself in red tape.
Because they don't want all the, you know, the this stuff happening. They want it to be more of like a football play than just a, you know, 300-pound guys just crashing into each other, you know, at full speed. I don't know. They're trying to...
I mean, like, you could do both, though. I mean, like, you'd have them not move until the... You know what I mean? And also keep the ball back so that it's not going into the end zone every time. I don't know.
What they're doing this year will not be the final solution to this. I can guarantee you
there'll be more choices
going forward. This is a radical change, and let's see if they tweak again next year or 2 years or 5 years.
Guaranteed that Hall of Fame game, I'm going to read 28 billion tweets about how bad it is, the kickoff rule.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. You'll hear about how bad the turf is there, and they'll complain, and they'll complain about that.
Jalen Mills signed this year for 1 year, $1.2 million. He's not going to be a build around guy, right? Because he signed it for 1 year. He's obviously not a move-on guy. He just bought him. He's a good-for-now guy, and he is as good-for-now gets. He is signed for exactly as long as they wanted him, for exactly as much as they wanted him. He's turning 30 years old. He's veteran guy. He's veteran depth. He's veteran intelligence. He's leadership in the defensive backfield, because there isn't any. There's no leadership in this defensive backfield, because there's the longest-tenured guy is, what, Darnay Holmes, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's literally good for now, because we just got him and they feel he's good for now. They,
yes,
that's the literal definition as well. We got him for 1 year. You're good for now.
More interesting, the Giants re-signed Darnay Holmes to a 1 year, $1.2 million contract against the cap. I think he actually made a little bit more than that. I think that this is... I don't think Giants fans are wrong or misguided by a groan to this re-signing. Darnay Holmes has not been stellar, but I would say that he's not been stellar in Wink Martindale's defense, which I would have never billed him up to be coming out of UCLA. Darnay Holmes is not a sticky man corner. I could have told you that. But he is a very good off-man corner. And from what I understand, in this defense, there will be a lot more off coverage. It allows the defensive backs to play as off as they are comfortable with, knowing their own skill set. So they can keep themselves at a, you know, a hypothetical arm's reach or a leg's reach as much as they're comfortable with closing in on the ball. So he was very good at that in Patrick Graham's defense. I would say he was an ascending talent in Patrick Graham's defense. You switch to Wink's defense and it's a completely different coverage philosophy where you're going to stick right with a guy where he's shorter than most receivers. You know, he's not a super long guy or anything like that. He's not the fastest long speed, and he's just not as good at mirroring movements that closely. He's going to lose it at cut points in the route. I think that this is probably going to be a much better defense for him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is a pivotal part of the defense at some point in this year. I don't know how long we're going to be relevant, so I'll just say that.
I had him as a very soft and pencil move on. But again, another one I'm not going to die on the hill of saying, you know, we got to get rid of this guy. So again, and with a new defensive coordinator and a change in defense, I'm going to give the move on guys a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. So like a wait and see. I think we'll have better answers next year during this evaluation of, this is the scheme we're running. This is the trends we like to do. These are, you know, this looks like a guy for this system type of thing. So I have him as a move on, but I really don't have that much conviction towards it.
Sliding forward, Cordell Flott signed through 2025. You know, he's on his rookie deal, so he's good for now no matter what. His roster spot is not impacting anything that I do. I'm at good for now and leaning kind of towards move on. Remember, he's super duper young. So there is that as well. But I also, and I might die on this hill. I might be dead on this hill. In that I think that Cordell Flott looks more comfortable, looks better on the outside perimeter playing corner than he does on the inside. I think he looks flustered on the inside. I think that he looks a little bit lost at times on the inside. And when he's on the outside and his job is to just cover the guy in front of him, I think he does a pretty good job. He stood up against A.J. Brown pretty well. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a nobody receiver. That's a very good receiver on a very good team.
I have on my notes here, I have good for now, eh.
Okay, fair enough.
To me, the best things he has going for him is the fact he's still young, he's still cheap.
Mm-hmm.
If he was, you know, going to be a free agent this year, I would probably have him in the move on category. Like, I think I've seen enough. I think there's, you know, we thought he was kind of a development project when we drafted him, right?
Yes.
So a development project means you have to develop him, and it doesn't happen overnight. It might take for some guys 2 years, some guys 4 years. I think he's going to have that opportunity. And again, for the reasons why we said he's cheap, he's young. There's no reason to get rid of him now. He's not embarrassing himself out there. But again, I don't think he's a factor in, you know, going into draft weekend, maybe trying to upgrade where he is. So that to me is he's a good for now. We'll think about him again next year.
And last on the list is Aaron Robinson in a contract year this year. He is 26 years old. I have him as move on. Who the hell is Aaron Robinson? We have not seen this guy in forever. And it's a damn shame because I like the skill set that Aaron Robinson has. I think he's an excellent slot corner from what I saw at UCF, I think. Mm-hmm. I know he transferred out of Alabama. I want to say UCF. Right.
He ended up at UCF, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I really liked him especially. I really liked him for Wink's defense. And we got to see him in the slot role zero times and on the outside where he does not belong a couple of times. And he got injured, got better for like a few snaps, and then got injured again. And he's been injured ever since. I have to think that at 26 years old, spending like 2 years straight up injured, his time is pretty much shot. You know, we were talking about spring football for all of 10 minutes at the start of this. maybe that's his chance to reclaim a couple of years in the NFL. Maybe next year, you know, not this upcoming season. Maybe the 2025 UFL season, he goes there, has a great time there where he is a star, and he can reclaim at 28 years old a couple of NFL years on a good contract with some health and some good luck. Maybe. I was really excited about him, and he didn't embarrass himself really on the field. He just hasn't been on the field, and there's no dependability if you can't be dependent on to be on the field.
I have him as a move on for those exact same reasons. You know, he's not 23 who injured last year and still has plenty of time. He's 26, and you know, coming back from ACL, that's a pretty significant injury, and you know, you're relying on explosiveness and speed that could impact it. We don't know what he's going to be like back on the field again. So I have him as a move on.
Yeah, I think it would be foolish to put him as anything else.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
No, I don't think the Giants are really going to be spending any longer. I think that their spending window has shut pretty tightly, but a couple guys that maybe they can move money around to solve this roster hole problem if they're unable to do so in the draft. I'm going to throw some names and ages out there. And that's all I'm really doing. That's Marcus May, 30 years old. Eddie Jackson, a ball hawk for Chicago, 30 years old as well. Ashton Davis with the Jets, 27 years old, was kind of like a highly prized guy with some speed and traits, might work. And I'm just going to throw this name in there because the Tennessee Titans went out and grabbed him last year, and that's Terrell Edmonds at 28 years old. Not a big fan myself, but you know, maybe they went out and grabbed him from a one-year deal last year because Bowen wanted him. I'm not totally sure, but could be.
I mean, when you're installing a new defense, you want guys who know the system and make that transition easier, whether they're the best, you know, guy's skill set, age, health, all of that stuff.
Sure. When Joe Judge brought in Logan Ryan.
Exactly.
He was someone that knew the New England philosophy.
Right. So you might see a move like that just to get, look, you know, we have 11 guys here learning a new system. It'd be nice to have one or two who kind of know what's going on a little bit more. So, again, not every move is made to win a Super Bowl, you know, in 7 years or today. It's moves to get your team in a position to do it. And that would be a move, you know, for a guy like him.
And in the draft, you know, I don't know how far he's going to fall, but Cooper DeJean from Iowa, or DeJean, I don't know how to say it, and I don't care. you know, I was on Talking Giants with Bobby and Justin last year. We did like a way too early 2024. That was one of the guys. I didn't know anything about him. He was listed as a corner on the sheet that they gave me. So I was like, all right, let me look this guy up. And, you know, I'm watching his 2022 film, and I'm like, this dude would make an excellent safety. Oh my god, I want him as he was my favorite guy of all the dudes that we did for that episode. And when I before we started recording, you know, we're just kind of getting levels and all that stuff, and I'm talking, and Bobby is asking me like who my favorite guy was. I was like, Cooper DeJean, man. He's like, really? I was like, oh yeah, you move him to safety and he is the man. And he was like, oh yeah, you're talking about moving to safety. Well, lo and behold, here he is. He is listed as a safety everywhere. And he is the consensus top guy. He suffered a pretty gruesome injury at the end of last season. So he was unable to do anything at the combine. I'm not sure if he is going to do anything at a pro day or did anything at a pro day. I'm not sure how ready he is right away. And I don't know how much that injury is going to impact his draft stock. But he is very, very good. I would not say it's six, but if he were to miraculously tumble to the second round, you run to the podium and run through anybody standing in your way kind of thing. He doesn't belong in the second round, I guess, is what I'm saying. But other than that, there's a couple of guys on day two, which I think is a little bit more likely, right? If you're looking for a kind of slot cornery kind of safety, Javon Bullard from Georgia is somebody I really like, was at the Senior Bowl. I believe he was voted best secondary guy on his respective team for the week or whatever. Cam Kinchins from Miami is one that I think a lot of people like. I think he's part of a lot of too high stuff. He might be a great fit for this defense. I'm a little less high on him than other people. He also had a pretty bad injury last year, caused him to miss a couple of games. I think he also can gamble a little too much. The guy I really kind of like in day two, Kalen Bullock from USC. A lot of speed. He likes to hit like a madman. I really do like watching him. I'm not really sure where he's going to fall. I have him as like a late round two, early round three kind of person. And I think that's a good sweet spot for the Giants to kind of, I mean, they traded away the early round three pick, right?
Yes, they did. That was part of the Burns trade, right?
So they have the late round three pick that they inherited or something, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, he may be off the table or you may have to reach for him. I'm not really sure, or trade back or something like that. But I would zero in on him and on my Grump channel pretty soon. I have an edge rusher video came out on Easter Sunday. I'm going to have a tight end video come out on Thursday since we did all that work for last week's episode. And then the safety episode's coming out on Monday. I'm aiming for it's going to be kind of hard and tight, but
you have no life. You can get it done.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. those are kind of my early draft targets. Still like a month until the draft. Unbelievable, right?
It's 3 weeks from Thursday, I believe.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that?
You think that's fast? Or you think that's been slow?
Well, the process to me always seems really, really long. But, you know, when you start talking 3 weeks, 3 weeks jumps at you really, really quickly. And
it's hard to ignore the process of starting, like, in December. You know what I mean? Like, the top prospects, if they're not in the championship tournament, they're not going to play in the bowl game. So they're already, like, declaring and, you know, doing private workouts and absolutely, all their stuff matters. That's all before New Year's.
Mm-hmm. And when it was Senior Bowl was early January, the combines in late February, early March, all these different things are happening. And yeah, it's just it's a long, long process.
It's a long time to keep having the same Daniel Jones conversation.
It's such a long process where guys jump up and down boards when nothing really is happening that, you know, merits like, oh, it's obvious this quarterback we thought might have been a mid-second round pick now might be a top 10 pick. It's just we have so much time to think about it and to review tape and, you know, swim with all the other sheep then become your own, you know, lone wolf out there. It makes for great content. It gives us something to do in the off season. But I'm ready to see what the picks are, who we have, and you know, let's go.
I am excited for the draft. It's one of my favorite football days of the year. It's every fan feels stoked for their team, even the team that's not going to do anything that year.
It's like opening day in baseball. It's kind of like, you know, and even if you're like, oh, I didn't want that guy. Well, your team still got better. You just got an increase in talent, no matter who it is that you got. Your team theoretically should be better than it was, you know, 5 months earlier.
Unless you're the Jets and you didn't turn in the card on time. Is it the Jets or the Vikings?
I think it was the Vikings. Yeah. Boy, what a shithead.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode. We will see you guys pretty soon. Be sure to like, subscribe, tell a friend about the show. I honestly can't wait for the draft, and that's going to be an exciting day. And then we're going to have really nothing to talk about. So that's going to come the...
Then we get into those heavy UFL conversations.
That, and you get into, you know, how many times have you seen Mr. Baseball, and... Yeah, all those wonderful movie conversation, food arguments, that sort of thing.
We have investment tips. Well, it'll be a lot of fun. I'll read the phone book. So all you youngins out there, go look up what the phone book is, and you'll get that joke. yeah.
Isn't that a... Oh, I can't think of his name. Never mind.
Good one.
Thanks. No, who was the comedian from Taxi that he was performing live and everyone wanted him to be the guy from Taxi, so he just started reading books?
Oh, Andy Kaufman?
Andy Kaufman. Thank you. I couldn't think of his name.
That sounds like a very Andy Kaufman thing to do, is just read
the phone book. Yes, thank you.
Larry David thing also would do. Also, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like this crowd tonight. I'm just going to read the
All right. Anyway, we'll see you guys next time. Until then, go Giants.
Go Giants.